dystopian nightmare novels that were meant as cautionary tales, not as how-to manuals, that no working-class American has ever or would ever volunteer to sign up for, no matter how loudly some are cheerleading on the right. This is the kind of authoritarian nightmare that we learned about as kids in high school. You know, those books that they're now trying to ban. And understand, picture it in the very near future, where every time you step outside, there could be a policeman, an ICE officer, or whomever Trump decides, or any future leader decides you need to be looked into. A neighbor didn't quite think enough of you, and now you're going to have to prove your citizenship. You're going to have to have your car searched, because evidently this is where we're going. Have your phone searched, all your digital records, because we're doing everything digitally. Or maybe even on-the-spot citizenship tests, much like sobriety tests. Because we pull people over now, they didn't do anything, but you might be drunk. You might not be a citizen if you can't pass the test. And it'll be cooked up by some Trump-appointed patronage hire, a bureaucrat who barely cracked open a history book, but he's going to be in charge because loyal to dear leader. And understand, this isn't fiction. It is a disturbing reality fast approaching us. Because as I said, the Supreme Court just gave Trump unprecedented power to fire independent watchdogs who might maybe have stood in the way. Agencies that were supposed to be impartial are now going to be just tools of dear leader or whomever. And you know what that means? Absolute power corrupts absolutely. So there'll be no checks, no balance, and certainly no less harassment. And remember those immigration raids from Los Angeles? People were just stopped, pulled out of their cars because maybe they didn't look quite right, or you know, they had an accent. Supreme Court's okay with that. Unprompted stops, whatever. Demand papers, arrests, even U.S. citizens, not just the others, not just the immigrants. And look, a working class person trying to make ends meet, you just want things to work. But you're going to be fair game as well. Your kids are going to be targets, your neighbors. Everyone in this environment's going to be at risk, and it's not going to stop there. They've got a new national database that is going to run through every federal state data source that you can imagine. Your social security numbers, your birth certificate, voting records, everything linked up so that you can be checked out. Your citizenship can be verified. And I know you don't think it's going to be you, but it's going to be everyone. Because if you think it's only about immigration, think again, you're wrong. Because when government agencies lose their independence, like when Trump fired these watchdogs, you are not protected. There's no one there for you. Your privacy is gone. Your freedoms crumble. And all my MAGA supporting friends who claim that this was all about security and law and order, no, you're just cheering on your own chains. This isn't the America we grew up in. It's a dystopian nightmare where every person's right to exist peacefully is going to be contingent on a bureaucratic guess about their paperwork or status. The line between citizen and suspect completely blurred and unchecked. You now no longer have the right to anything other than to shut the up and fall in the line and obey to dear leader. Gotta tell you, not good times. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Tell me what you think. You ready for it? You ready for dear leader? And you better know your favorite executive order. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the day that the Boston police went out on strike. The police in Boston had not had a raise for over 6 years. They worked long shifts, sometimes even more than 80 hours a week. The police force was predominantly Irish. Many had served as U.S. soldiers in World War I. Fed up with their working conditions, the police formed a union and joined the American Federation of Labor. Boston's police commissioner, Edwin U. Curtis, refused to recognize the police union and fired 19 police officers for their organizing efforts. In response, the new union voted overwhelmingly to support a walkout. More than 1,100 police officers voted to strike, with only 2 voting no. Across the country, newspapers made dire predictions about the collapse of law and order in Boston. While there was an upsurge in crime due to the lack of police on the streets, the press wildly exaggerated what was happening in the city. Newspapers ran stories about gangs running wild with rioters and communists attacking women, fueling Red Scare fears. The entire labor movement came under attack. Massachusetts Governor Calvin Coolidge declared, quote, "There is no right to strike against public safety by anyone, anywhere, anytime." This hard line against the striking police helped propel him to the national stage and eventually to the Oval Office. The striking policemen were fired and replaced with unemployed World War I veterans. In response to the national outcry over the strike, the American Federation of Labor revoked the charter for other police unions. The Boston police strike is the subject of the page-turner The Given Day by author Dennis Lehane. A fictionalized account of the events surrounding the strike, the novel follows the experiences of one Irish policeman during this tumultuous time.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I gotta tell you, Operation Midway Blitz. That Apocalypse Now Truth Social post from the other day are ringing true. I guess Chicago is gonna find out why it's the Department of War, and this is the guy who wants a Nobel Peace Prize. But I guess bombing your own people. I guess that doesn't count. I got to tell you, though, I love what Chicago did with all the plow trucks and all the salt trucks and stuff. Going to be interesting to see where this goes. I'm here to share some thoughts on, Operation Midway Blitz. I've asked my good friend Lisa Graves to come share some thoughts with us. Lisa is the founder and executive director of True North Research. TrueNorthResearch.org, the website where you can find the primer on authoritarian infrastructure here in the U.S. She's literally co-written the paper to explain exactly what we're living through. Lisa, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks so much for having me on. And I just can't believe what we're seeing, but I've been saying that for many days now, months now.
So, Operation Midway Blitz. Really? I mean, yeah. Orwell has got to be looking down, screaming, going, "I told you!"
Yeah. Yeah, it's stunning to see this this president unleashing troops or trying to unleash troops on the American people, on our American cities, and doing it so cavalierly. But not just that, doing a number of these operations with the imprimatur, with the blessing of this captured U.S. Supreme Court. And so we really are in a crisis, and we've been in a crisis for many, many months now. But it seems to be escalating, and the Supreme Court is not enforcing the laws, and not enforcing the precedents as it has, as the court has traditionally, and instead seems to be going out of its way to help Trump engage in these really unprecedented sets of actions. And this and the other part, not that the substance obviously matters a lot, but like the naming, the ridiculous tweets, the Apocalypse Now, the I love, in the morning, like the reference to I love napalm, the smell of napalm in the morning, like it is so grotesque. And it really is a huge transgression of our constitutional system, of our legal system, of the rule of law.
But it really is who he is, though. I mean, this is when people say, when I hear people say, "Well, I didn't vote for this." No, you did. Yeah, you knew. And then look, you know, there are a couple of Republicans who are going, yep, this is exactly what I voted for. I wanted to go into these cities. I want to go after those people. So I guess the question I've got for you is, how does this Operation Midway Blitz, how does this exemplify the trend that we're seeing of federal power over local authority, especially from the people who told us that they were all about that 10th Amendment and states' rights?
Yeah, I've been hearing the arguments from the right wing really for several decades now about the importance of the federal government limiting its boundaries, this idea, their idea of the 10th Amendment, which has been used by some of them to try to block efforts to live up to the 14th Amendment's promise of equal protection of the law, because a lot of those arguments really, the modern version of those arguments were generated in response to desegregation. But you have this party that has been behaving in a way that is really unprincipled, not following those principles, those things that we heard about the importance of local government, that local government is the most important, the importance of respecting local police, the importance of the government closest to you being the most democratic, the most small d democratic. And now we're in this period where that political party is asserting really unprecedented powers, or powers that they don't actually really possess if we were actually following longtime precedents, right, to inject themselves into local law enforcement, which that's not how the law works. The law in general in this set of areas has said that if a governor or a city wants to ask for federal help, they can ask for it, and sure, it may or may not be given, but they can ask for it. There's virtually no precedent for, certainly no modern precedent, for the federal government pretending like it gets to be a local police force in arresting people or seizing people when the governors and the mayors are not asking for their help, do not want them help or their help, or asking them to stop, to not be patrolling the streets with these heavy military weapons, to not be harassing people, to not be disrupting our communities with this heavy hand of the federal government, and not just federal government, but military people who serve in the National Guard, people who serve in our armed services, whose job is really to protect us from foreign enemies.
But here's the thing, we've been moving towards a militarized police force for years now. I mean, my local community's got a tank. We're just a small, couple thousand people, but they've got a tank. So we've been moving in this direction. They've been preparing us for this. I've been saying this has been an inevitability, especially with a Republican, because they've already trained their base to believe that Obama and Biden and the evil Democrats are already doing all of the things that they're doing. So it's an interesting bit, because my mother always used to say, if someone's accusing you of doing something, they're probably the ones doing it, because when you point your finger, you got three pointed back at you. This seems like that.
Yeah, it really does. And it's not the case. Like there were all these right wing rumors that Obama was going to put people in internment camps, or Biden was. Those were completely ridiculous, ridiculous, absurd accusations. You know, we even had people responding to a federal help in the aftermath of the hurricane hitting the mountains of North Carolina, that storm, with people having fear and hostility toward FEMA and federal aid, because there's been just so much right-wing propaganda over these issues that is baseless. And now people who were flying these don't tread on me flags, who supported Trump because they have articulated a support for liberty from, government intrusion, government oppression, some of those people have been supporting and cheerleading on this extraordinary, outrageous effort by Trump, these plans that they are unleashing sort of piece by piece to inject this militarized, not just militarized police, but militarized military, in essence, in our cities. And as you point out, Rick, we already had a situation where there was so much excess funding of the Department of Homeland Security during the George W. Bush administration, that they were basically trying to offload so much equipment of that military equipment into local law enforcement. We've had a massive expansion of the type of equipment in small towns and cities based on that effort. And now here we are with having troops basically coming into cities. And the other thing I just want to flag, and I wrote about this just this past week on Substack, is when Trump was calling people to Washington, D.C. on January 6th, when he was, according to the testimony, telling his aides and the Secret Service, do not put his people through the magnetrons for that speech on January 6th. 2 days before that, Trump had asked the Department of Defense to disarm the D.C. National Guard. So they would not have batons or shields or weapons on January 6th to contend with any violence that broke out. That's part of why there was such a delay in the National Guard protecting the Capitol, because they were disarmed by Trump and by his acting Secretary of Defense. And now in this scenario where we're seeing him deploy these guardsmen, deploy these military officers and soldiers, they are not disarmed. Foreign enemies.
But here's the thing, we've been moving towards a militarized police force for years now. I mean, my local community's got a tank. We're just a small, couple thousand people, but they've got a tank. So we've been moving in this direction. They've been preparing us for this. I've been saying this has been an inevitability, especially with a Republican, because they've already trained their base to believe that Obama and Biden and the evil Democrats are already doing all of the things that they're doing. So it's an interesting bit, because my mother always used to say, if someone's accusing you of doing something, they're probably the ones doing it, because when you point your finger, you got three pointed back at you. This seems like that.
Yeah, it really does. And it's not the case. Like there were all these right-wing rumors that Obama was going to put people in internment camps, or Biden was. Those were completely ridiculous, absurd accusations. We even had people responding to a federal help in the aftermath of the hurricane hitting the mountains of North Carolina, that storm, with people having fear and hostility toward FEMA and federal aid, because there's been just so much right-wing propaganda over these issues that is baseless. And now people who were flying these don't tread on me flags, who supported Trump because they have articulated a support for liberty from, government intrusion, government oppression. Some of those people have been supporting and cheerleading on this extraordinary, outrageous effort by Trump, these plans that they are unleashing sort of piece by piece to inject this militarized, not just militarized police, but militarized military in essence, in our cities. And as you point out, Rick, we already had a situation where there was so much excess funding of the Department of Homeland Security during the George W. Bush administration, that they were basically trying to offload so much equipment of that military equipment into local law enforcement. We've had a massive expansion of the type of equipment in small towns and cities based on that effort. And now here we are with having troops basically coming into cities. And the other thing I just want to flag, and I wrote about this just this past week on Substack, is when Trump was calling people to Washington, D.C. on January 6th, when he was, according to the testimony, telling his aides and the Secret Service, do not put his people through the magnetrons for that speech on January 6th. 2 days before that, Trump had asked the Department of Defense to disarm the D.C. National Guard. So they would not have batons or shields or weapons on January 6th to contend with any violence that broke out. That's part of why there was such a delay in the National Guard protecting the Capitol, because they were disarmed by Trump and by his acting Secretary of Defense. And now in this scenario where we're seeing him deploy these guardsmen, deploy these military officers and soldiers, they are not disarmed. In fact, they've been super armed.
Yeah. And against us. And this is the part that's kind of scary about John Roberts' decision here recently to allow Trump to just and these ICE agents and whomever Trump appoints or anoints to be able to question you about your papers, or we don't like the way you look, prove who you are. Really a massive invasion of privacy that I think Republicans used to be against.
Yeah, I remember during the Patriot Act reauthorization fights and the reforms that we were working on a bipartisan, transpartisan basis in 2005, 2006, 2000.
You know, it's one of those things where, look, you know, and this is, you know, Lisa, what I've been really concerned about, you know, quite a bit, is the fact that, look, if you give them the kind of power that they can harass anybody at any time for any reason, just because they think you might not be one, the right one, eventually, when does it, I guess the question I have for you, Lisa, is, you know, when does it trickle down to the rest of us? When do is it you or me or our kids or whomever? And when it's not just the others.
Well, that really has been the challenge of these past several months, which is if the Department of Homeland Security can just whisk people out of the country without any due process, all of us are vulnerable. Americans have not been used to and should not be used to having to carry their citizenship papers with them. I actually travel now with my passport. I've never traveled with my passport when I was not traveling abroad, because it has not been necessary in America in my lifetime to have that record available to prove that you're a citizen. But it's not even enough in some of these cities where people who are citizens have been arrested. They've shown their ID, their real ID, the now mandatory driver's licenses with the new biometric, you know, or the new security measures and the proof of your past, you know, birth certificate, et cetera. Some people have shown those to ICE officers and still been seized. And so it is coming home to roost, because this situation in which we do not have adequate due process, when those due process norms are not being followed, where the U.S. Supreme Court is not insisting rigorously and vigorously that they be followed, everyone is at risk of being seized by, you know, an agent, and then them saying, well, I don't believe that you're who you say you are. I don't believe that you're a citizen, or you look Latino, or you look, you know, like an immigrant. And there are people who have been born here who have been seized already in the past several months.
You look like an immigrant in a country of
immigrants.
Ironically, of immigrants. Yeah. That's, wow, remarkable. But let me ask you, you know, because again, you wrote the primer for what was coming. What connections do you see between Trump's expansion of surveillance and enforcement, as you described in your report, and the specific tactics that they're talking about employing in this Operation Midway Blitz?
Well, that's right. We wrote a piece for True North Research earlier this year about the authoritarian infrastructure and that the use of immigration as a sort of a dog whistle to basically make claims about, for example, to make claims that there's just this massive number of criminals who have immigrated the United States or who have infiltrated the United States, and they have to have this force. Well, the reality is that there aren't actually that many criminals in the United States. There aren't that many immigrants who are criminals. The people who have been adjudicated as for committing a crime, they're in jail as part of the normal process at the end of their sentence. They're removed from the United States. If they can't be removed because there aren't diplomatic relations, they're held until a solution to deport them is found. And so because that lie that has been told on Fox repeatedly by these Trump apologists and Trump himself, the false claims that they've made about there being this massive amount of crime or criminal aliens, it's just not true. And so now they're turning their forces inward, arresting people at job sites, arresting people who have never been convicted of a crime, have not ever been charged with a crime, who may not have papers, proper documentation for being in the United States, but those aren't crimes, those are civil violations. And those civil violations also do not, under normal circumstances, get you seized without any opportunity to have a lawyer or a judge adjudicate your case. They typically do not get you whisked out of the country in the dark of night to a foreign hellhole prison or a country that is under civil war or destabilized. These are not normal circumstances. And it's because they've told this lie. And that's what our report talks a bit about, that propaganda machine and how that propaganda machine has been used as the basis for justifying this extraordinary, unprecedented use of force internally within the United States. But because there is not the crisis that they say exists, then they're turning that on people who are running food trucks or who are at a hotel cleaning rooms. Like they are using this weaponization, this fear of immigrants, this dog whistle about immigration in order to justify these extraordinarily repressive actions that are ripping families apart, that are tearing businesses apart, that are, you know, creating all sorts of unsafety. Like the idea that someone can be walking down the street and seized by a person in a mask.
Seized.
Who claims that they've got authority without showing a badge. That is so risky for the women of America, for the children of America. That how do you know that that van isn't a predator, a sexual predator? How do you know that van is not a sex trafficking ring? How do you know that's not a murderer or a mass murderer? Like the idea that we now have a federal law enforcement part of the Trump administration, the Trump regime, that thinks, and with the license, in essence, of this Supreme Court, that they can just seize people without proper authorization, without identification, without a judicial process that is within, 24 hours of going before to show under habeas why you're being held, why you're being charged. This is a recipe for a disaster in terms of having the United States become a truly repressive regime.
I think it's interesting you use the word seize. That's what caught my attention. You don't seize people. They've been kidnapped. If you were to see it on TV, you go, hey, somebody got kidnapped. Somebody with a mask on wearing a windbreaker that says police or whatever, ICE or whatever. You're right. How do you know it's just not some idiot who bought a windbreaker and wrote ICE on it?
Yeah. No, the risks are enormous. The safety risks for the ordinary people to be kidnapped, to be captured by bad actors, people who don't have any legal authority, let alone by people who assert a legal authority that actually they don't have. We do not have roving bands, America has not typically tolerated roving bands of masked agents, other than, I suppose, the Lone Ranger TV series back in the day, but he was on the side of actually trying to protect people in the, fiction that is. But we do not have a history actually of tolerating people being ripped from the streets, thrown into vans by people who do not actually even have a badge number, and who are telling people they're going to grab them too if they photograph it, if they, try to intervene, that they'll be seized too. So we have a real crisis, and I'm so proud of the brave people who are photographing these seizures, these kidnappings, and who are then trying to track people, because what's been happening for some of those individuals is they're taken out of their state to a whole other state where they can't get access to a lawyer, or in the case of this outrageous concentration camp, quite frankly, in Florida. And I say concentration because it's an attempt to deny process to people by putting them in, in a swamp, in a wetlands in Florida, where there aren't facilities for them to meet with their attorneys, where legislators at the state and federal level have sought access to those facilities and been denied, where people can't make phone calls, where it's not even clear on the sort of Potemkin Village tours that some legislators have been allowed, that they're even having access to ordinary restrooms. I mean, these are hellish circumstances that no American should tolerate or be willing to tolerate, that other people living in the United States can be treated this way, and also that they can be treated this way without any fair, independent judicial review of the basis for them being held and whether there is a basis and an opportunity to get out. And by the way, one of the things I wrote about a few weeks ago was, at the time that Trump is touting this inhumane facility in Florida, his administration was then moving a convicted sex trafficker, Ghislaine Maxwell, from a prison, a secure prison environment, where she'd been sentenced to a sentence of more than 20 years, based in part on a sentencing report that documented that she had been involved in, and she and Epstein had preyed upon at least 30 young women, and some of them were girls, children, during a 6-year period of that particular indictment. Could be more in a longer period, but she had been convicted and sentenced, convicted by an American jury, sentenced to more than 20 years in prison, and she was whisked off to a minimum security club fed while people are sitting there at that other facility in Florida who haven't been convicted of any crime, let alone
it's good to know people,
young girls.
It's good to know people, especially people who are on the list. So last question I've got for you real quick, what do we do in this? I mean, I know in the piece you call for a renewed fight for liberty and justice for all, but what's the strategy? What should we be doing?
Well, you know, there's still value in that sanding the gears, the litigation at the lower court level, the district court litigation is important, but ultimately we're going to have to come together to demand that our constitution be enforced. And we have an anniversary of our Declaration of Independence coming up next year. It's the 250th anniversary in which the people who founded this country, you know, stood up to a tyrant, stood up to a man who did not follow the legislative process, who did not, a king, King George III, who asserted unlimited tyrannical powers. And we have to say this anniversary, this Declaration of Independence is about us and our independence and the fact that we insist on having the rule of law followed. And we're going to vote for, move for, walk for, stand up for the kind of reforms that are necessary to insist that our rights, that our freedom, that our independence is protected.
There you go. Lisa, I appreciate the time. Always great talking with you. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon. Thanks so
Definitely
much.
Definitely will. Thank you so much, Rick.
Lisa Graves, founder and executive director there at True North Research. Check out the work that they do, truenorthresearch.org. We'll get links out on social media. Want to hear your thoughts. Concerned? Maybe a little bit? Worried? Maybe a little bit? I want to hear it. Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, a mostly cloudy sky with a few showers and thunderstorms around. Low temperatures into the low 60s. For tomorrow, maybe a lingering early shower and some areas of fog, then turning partly sunny for the afternoon. A high right around 80. It's 67 right now.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information. And WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I caught this article over at The Motley Fool, and I couldn't help but go, kind of foolish, because the headline read, "Your Social Security raise is set for a Trump bump. Here's how much extra you can expect because of your Trump bump." And the reality is Trump had nothing to do with it. In fact, your Trump bump is kind of like a bump off. Because with the cost of tariffs and the cost of healthcare and everything going way up, whatever the COLA is going to be, I don't know. Or is the argument that the cost of living is going to be so freaking high that you're going to get a little bit of something, but your standard of living is still going to toilet. But that's why I reached out to the go-to person on everything in my world having to do with Social Security. I've asked Alex Lawson to come share some thoughts. He's the executive director over at Social Security Works. You can check out their work at socialsecurityworks.org. Alex, thanks for taking time for us.
Always my pleasure, Rick. And yeah,
Trump bump.
They are. They're trying to. I like your setup. They're bumping people off. That's what's actually happening. It's a really. I think I'd garble the anecdote, but it just comes down to that the Republicans are really good at understanding that their job is selling soap, right? It's selling a product. And they don't care, just like many corporate advertisers, what the truth is. They know that they're selling, right? And so they get out there and they brand things. They take credit for stuff that's not theirs. They actually convince large portions of their voters that what's happening right in front of their faces is not happening. And, you know, if they can't do that, then they immediately go to, oh, well, that was Biden's fault. And you know it's really bad when they're like, it was Obama's fault. But the, you know, what they're talking about in that Motley Fool article is the normal cost of living adjustment, which is, again, going to totally not keep up with the actual cost of living increases that seniors, people with disabilities, that people relying on Social Security are facing. Because I don't want to get too boring, but, you know, it's actually it is based on the costs that workers are facing, the average worker. And seniors are definitely face different costs.
Right.
Primarily, it's the health care. That's the main difference between them. But there's nothing particularly different next year than, you know, say this year.
Well, other than because where my mind went as I was reading through some of the article and I was thinking about it, the costs are going to go up. You know, things are going up, and maybe the Trump bump is the fact that healthcare is going way up. Groceries are going way up. The costs for average Americans are going up. So the bump is the cost of living has gotten so much higher that actually going to get a raise of some note in Social Security. Granted, not going to keep up with the cost of living, not going to make your life better, but they got a cute name, Alex. So come on, yeah. Give them credit. They got a cute name.
They're good at selling soap. That is what it is. But I you know, inflation is still not, we're not seeing, I'm the projections of the COLA for next year are not anything that much higher than they were for this year. You know, you still like 2.7 is, I think, what we'll know in October, in, you know, just a little bit more, we'll actually be able to tell you what it is. But that is, if there was a large cost of living increase, it would be because of inflationary pressures. But we're seeing in the economic data, and I know you watch this as much as I do, there's some submerged inflation, right? There's pressure going both ways. So you're seeing a massive weakening in the labor market as the economy looks to be careening towards recession, which pulls down. And then there is the pressure from tariffs, which pushes the price of individual and baskets of goods up. So this is the, you know, the dreaded stagflation, where you have recession or high unemployment and rising prices. And that is like the setup that I'm not an economist, but I read a lot of them. I read the bad ones and the good ones, and I watch a lot of the financial press. That is sort of a consensus view that there's got to be, something's got to give. And it's still, the setup seems to be weak labor market, yeah, with increasing prices. That's a disaster for working Americans. And that's, you know, their only hope. And it's the reason why Donald Trump is, you know, encroaching on the independence of the Fed, is for the Federal Reserve to goose the stock market with, and the economy, by cutting rates. And I don't even want to get into whether they should or they shouldn't, because I am definitely more of a, like, let's make sure that we don't face high unemployment. And Rick, we've talked about this before. There's an enormous number of people who are like, you know, young people now who have never seen what a recession is. They've never lived in a high unemployment environment. High inflation seems like the worst thing that can happen with rising prices, and it's absolutely terrible right up until you get into the depths of a huge downturn. And then you're like, oh, wow, there's also this possibility that there's not going to be any jobs.
Right. And ultimately no money to buy anything at any price.
Right.
But here's the thing, and this is the reason I brought this up, is I've been saying for a very long time that the right does, in your words, a really great job of selling soap and getting people to buy into the rhetoric, when the reality is that, you know, it's my view, and maybe you share it as well. I know the person who wrote an article over at The Hill, Nancy Altman, who's part of your group, believes it. The title of the article that I saw on Sunday was, Trump is breaking Social Security. So on one hand, you've got this advertisement that, you know, we're going to get the Trump bump, and you got the head of the Social Security Administration running around saying things are great, don't worry, nothing to see, when the reality is, it seems, and help me here, that they're doing everything they can do to destroy it, privatize it, whatever. You look at what happened with Doge, and there's a lot of bad here in my view. So walk me through some of this.
It's sorry, maybe I'm bearing the lead or getting lost on economics. I like to think about the story is absolutely not only has anything changed from what Doge started, what Elon Musk started. Well, one thing, their PR strategy has changed, but the actions that they're taking have just accelerated. They are literally breaking Social Security. Just more and more disruptions, delays, complaints coming in. And these are things that are novel, except that they were exactly what the experts were warning us starting in February. They're like, you're going to start seeing this. And then it's a path to a literal catastrophe, a calamity. You know, 70 million Americans and some large percentage of them are not getting their checks on time. And there's nowhere for them to go because they've fired all of the people who work in the offices.
But we'll have AI. There'll be AI. Yeah. You could talk to an AI person.
Exactly. I'm sorry, I shouldn't do this, but just as a little aside, just like on that. Yeah. Cato, the libertarian think tank today, put out a big thing with young people and how they hate Social Security. And someone was like, that's all AI. None of those people are real. And so, you know, yeah, if you live in a fake world, then, you know, people don't like Social Security and everything's going great over there. But the reality is the polar opposite. They are, though, really good at selling soap. And I get angry. Martin O'Malley actually did a great job going around, but he was generally what he was trying to do is get more money from Congress to fund the Social Security Administration, saying, hey, we can do amazing things. We just need a bit of funding. What Donald Trump's commissioner is doing is he's doing a whole tour of the press, especially like the financial press. So he's doing a lot in, it seems like he wants to talk to his voters, but he also is sort of counter-programming what Elon Musk did. Remember, Elon Musk would go on and he'd be like, hey, there's all this fraud in the system. And that's why we've got to, you know, take a hatchet to it. And that was deeply unpopular, right? People don't buy it. They're like, there's not a ton of fraud in the system. And Donald Trump said, there's 130-year-olds getting checks. And people are like, no, there's not.
A 200-year-old, wasn't there?
Say that again.
There was a 200-year-old. I know there were a couple of 150-year-olds, and yeah, there at least one 200-year-old.
And people were like, come on.
The system was even around then.
They have adjusted. So Bisignano is taking a different tack. He's not trying to say there's all these problems. He's trying to say there's no problems. We didn't do anything. Everything's going great. But I'm telling you, like, not only has it not slowed down, it hasn't changed course, right? They haven't stopped doing what they're doing. It's just accelerated. The chief data person just last week filed a whistleblower complaint because Big Balls, the 20-year-old who's literally in charge of all of our data at the Social Security Administration, you know, I don't think you put a 20-year-old named Big Balls in charge of America's data if you're planning on making things better, right? No. Like, that's what you do if you're planning on wrecking things. That guy uploaded all of our data to the cloud, right? Like, that's not an accident. The guy works for Elon Musk. That's not an accident. The whistleblower, you know, the chief data officer. And then the administration pushed him out. That's last week. Last week, the data part, the technology part of Social Security is the thing that when it gets there, that's when catastrophe strikes. So they're not trying to fix it. They're not trying to make anything better, but they are out there selling soap. You know, yeah, you're going to get a Trump bump. Oh, it's the best customer service you've ever seen. Don't believe your lying eyes. Believe this billionaire who's going on TV and telling you that everything's fine. Oh, and by the way, that dude runs a he made his billions running a company that would be the company that that benefits from privatizing Social Security.
Nobody's right? surprised by that.
They're not trying to hide it, Rick.
No, and this is the one thing, the one bit of credit that I give Trump. For the first time in his life, he's been completely honest. They are completely forthright. And this isn't because these are Trump's ideas. I don't give him credit for all of this. This is because the think tank world, from the Heritage Foundation all the way down, all those state policy network think tanks across the country, where billionaires pay really smart people to dream up really bad ideas, this is kind of like their Super Bowl. Every bad idea they've ever had a wet dream over now comes to fruition.
It's all of them too. That's yep. the part that's like, you know, exhausting and shocking. And because there was always like some amount of, you know, the Republicans would come out during an election year and talk to their MAGA base, and they'd be like, "We're going to get rid of the Department of Education. We're going to, you know, privatize Social Security, privatize Medicare." But then when you sort of attacked them on it, they're like, "Oh no, I never said that." And they because they knew the political reality is that all of those ideas, like any one of them, will take down their political career. They're so incredibly outside of the mainstream and deeply unpopular. Only like this tiny vocal reactionary sliver in their base, which is basically their donors, right? It's Eisenhower called them, I can't remember the whole phrase off the top of my head, but you know, he called them tiny sliver who are mainly billionaires, oil men, and their numbers are small and they are stupid. Yep. That was Dwight D. Eisenhower's.
One of my favorite quotes in the letter to his brother, Edgar, one of my favorite quotes, because he was talking about is Social Security. He was talking about the farm bill. He was talking about unemployment. He was talking about labor unions. He was talking about all of these things that, you know, now we kind of take for granted and are being under assault right now. But he knew back then that the moneyed interests wanted to destroy all of that. And now they've got it into place. So my question now becomes, you know, how is it that now it's different? Because I get a lot of emails from people who don't seem to care about any of this stuff. They're fixated on, you know, whatever the outrage du jour is, whether it's, you know, Karen taking a baseball or, where someone goes to the bathroom or any of that. Why has that changed?
Yeah, it's the propaganda cannon is massive. And, you know, I don't think that it's when reality looks like a dystopian, sci-fi, it's sort of hard to look that in the face. But it's not actually, they don't hide it. Like, who was just at the White House, right? It's Zuckerberg, all the billionaire tech guys who mainly are the ones who control what people see now. You already had, you know, the billionaire corporate-owned media, six corporations controlling 90% of the media. I mean, you know this. You have to produce your own show, you know? Like, it's like you have to do that with all your own because the structure is set up to actually empower people who are kissing billionaires' butts. But now you've got tech and, you know, you've got Palantir and Peter Thiel, this massive surveillance network. Just it's all this data, yep. Surveillance, and then this propaganda. And it can be really targeted. So,
but let me stop here. Let me go through this because, you know, one of the other things that's concerning to me is, you know, like you pointed out a moment ago, Doge Boy and his ferrets went and got all of our Social Security data and basically all the data our government has. And I remember, you know, up until the 2024 election, a lot of the red hats that I know were freaking out that Democrats were going to bring the Chinese credit score, the social credit score to the U.S. And then the Democrats are going to do it. And yet I look at Trump. I look at the tech world coming around. I look at the fact that as part of their big, beautiful bill, can't regulate AI for the next decade from states. I look at all of this stuff And it seems, it seems eerily kind of potentially in that direction.
I don't think that's what I'm talking about. It's like scary looking at dystopian sci-fi. No, it is there. We're there. And, you know, every attack of theirs is always an admission. What Palantir does and has done for both, you know, autocratic dictatorial powers outside of this country and, you know, murderous cartels in Mexico, they don't care. It's all about this right wing power. So they do actually care somewhat, but it has to be for the benefit of the billionaire class. Their whole thing is to control, to have every piece of data about you. Why did Big Balls upload all of the data to the cloud, right? You know what that means is that everybody who has access to the cloud, they don't legally have access to it, but the reason it was never uploaded before is because they could not get into the servers, right? They couldn't get there. This guy took all of our data and put it up there and was like, oops, the daisy. You're like, yeah, that's for the Elon Musk and his billionaire dad. Elon Musk does not make his money off of cars. He makes his money off of data.
Yep.
He's a data broker. And Elon Musk and Peter Thiel are the same thing. Peter Thiel and him started PayPal together. That was their whole genius was that people were going to buy things over the internet, the government funded internet. You know, they're not geniuses. They were just lucky to be in the right place at the right time. And we're like, people are going to buy things over the internet, not genius. But what they believe in, they're not. Have you seen Peter Thiel's latest rant, the Antichrist stuff? I mean, this guy is unhinged. And he openly talks about controlling every aspect of people's lives using technology because their ideas can't actually win in a democracy.
Right.
They're like, our stuff is so unpopular, we have to use technology to cheat. And then you sort of bring that back around to why they attack Social Security and all of these programs that work, because they empower people. They don't allow the billionaires to control every aspect of our lives. And that's why they're working to tear them down. And they're using their propaganda to do these deeply unpopular things. So it's a vicious, disgusting cycle in service of a really dark ideology.
So lastly, I just want to make sure I'm clear. No Trump bump.
There is going to be a COLA. If you want to call it a Nixon bump, you can do that. Because Richard Nixon is who signed it into law, right? It was the history of the COLA. The COLA is an integral part of a Social Security benefit. All right. So nobody gets credit for the COLA except for the people who created this system and saw that one of the things we have to do is ensure that it doesn't the value doesn't erode over time due to inflation. So every year there's a cost of living adjustment. And that's just one other thing that the billionaires are trying to destroy. So, no, there's There is going to be a COLA, but the story about Trump and Social Security is that he's trying to bump off Social Security. That's what the story is. This guy's working day and night with his hand-picked billionaire, Bisignano, to destroy Social Security. And people should be scared and outraged about that. And, you know, they can call their senators, they can call their house, their member in the House of Representatives and just tell them, we have to reverse everything that Doge has done. We need hiring more people into the offices on Social Security. Yep. But no, the COLA is coming. People should be as happy every year that that exists as they are that, you know, their monthly Social Security check is coming.
There you go. Alex, I appreciate the time as always. Good stuff.
Thanks, Rick.
Our good friend Alex Lawson, Executive Director of Social Security Works. Check out their website, socialsecurityworks.org. Want to hear your thoughts. You looking forward to the big bump off? And remember, when it happens, told you so. So how about say doing something about it and don't let me say that. Want to hear your thoughts, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Got to tell you, I really like Alex Lawson. I like the work that they do there at Social Security Works. Make sure you check out their website, socialsecurityworks.org. Because look, you know, they have been fighting the good fight for a very long time. And when Alex Lawson says that, hey, there's a chance in the near future that the check's not gonna be on time, that they're actually destroying the Social Security system and setting it up to fail, I believe him. Because the reality is, this is a guy who's been spent the majority of his working life defending this. And this is one of those things that shouldn't be red hat, blue hat, right, left, Democrat, Republican, shouldn't be partisan. This is something every working person in this country should be going, it's a great anti-poverty program. I'm going to make sure that when I get old, I'm not going to have to eat cat food like past generations. The weird thing is they've sold us on this idea that we're all going to be billionaires. And I know a lot of people who seem to think without, you know, actually doing anything to move in that direction, that they're going to, you know, find the golden ticket. And the weird thing is Americans, even after is screwing over as we've been getting through the capital, through lots of capital intensive systems, still find capitalism more favorable than socialism without actually understanding or being able to define what socialism is. But weirdly enough, according to the latest Gallup poll, not by as much as, well, just a couple of years ago, or, you know, 20 years ago. 54% now say that they're favoring capitalism. That's down from 60% just 4 years ago. Because understand, the people who are the winners in the capitalist system, they're the folks who are running our government right now and not doing it very well. And not, I'll be honest, I really thought Trump had the CEO class in line. I really thought that prices would immediately start to come down, even if it meant some short-term losses just for the messaging. You know, like when Reagan took office, the Iranians let the hostages go the second his hand touched the Bible. Now, you go back and you read about the story, you know, in the rearview mirror. For months, they were trying to get rid of the American hostages and just ended up holding them until that symbolic moment. So when Alex says that they're good at selling soap, they really are. But the other part of it is not just selling the soap, but the Democrats are just so bad at branding themselves. Because I still go back to Lebanon, you know, not too far from where I live. And the guy going, you get your government hands off my Medicare, without understanding government ran Medicare. It is kind of socialism. It's social health insurance. So when we're forced into these binary choices of, you know, it's either capitalism or socialism, most people are going to go, oh, well, we got to go over here, because that's what we've been trained to think like. And for me, I'm hoping that at some point we get out of this red hat, blue hat thinking and start going, what's best for we, the working people? What's going to make our lives better? And I'll tell you, strengthening Social Security and expanding it along with social health insurance, that's going to be good for the working class of this country. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Hours after the arrest of a 22-year-old Utah man and the murder of her husband earlier this week, the widow of Charlie Kirk speaks to the public for the first time.
To everyone listening tonight across America, the movement my husband built will not die.
Mrs. Erica Kirk, courtesy of Turning Point USA.
They killed Charlie because he preached a message of patriotism, faith, and of God's merciful love.
She said, if you thought her husband's mission was powerful before,
you have no idea.
She said the campus tour will continue and his radio and podcast show will go on. Stacy Lynn, CBS News.
Authorities have